Happy New Year, everyone. I wish only the best for you. Love, creativity, crypto, anything that you need. Thank you for listening to the first episode for 2021 of Games from the Block. Today with me is a special guest who doesn't really need an introduction. He's a blockchain and Bitcoin advocate since 2012, if I'm not mistaken. Ladies and gentlemen, Andreas Antonopoulos. And before we get to the interview, I would like to remind you that there is a giveaway going on with three books by Andreas Antonopoulos: Mastering Ethereum and The Internet of Money, Volume 3. We are giving away three books in total from our Twitter. So go to the Twitter, egamers.io, and take part in the giveaway to make one of these three books yours and further expand your knowledge. So without further ado, let's get to the interview. Andreas, Merry Christmas. Thank you for being here to the Games from the Block podcast.
Thank you so much, George. It's a pleasure to be on the
likewise,
show.
Likewise. So you have been a Bitcoin advocate for, I don't know how many years, since I remember blockchain, I remember your name, and I'm very grateful to have you here with us. And I would like to begin the discussion with non-fungible tokens. I'm aware that you have published a book, Mastering Ethereum, DApps and Smart Contracts. Mm-hmm. Where do you see the DApp scene and the smart contracts in the next few years? Do you believe that Ethereum might, allow me the expression, take over the world, become the new internet? All these decentralized apps, do they have a future?
Yes, I certainly think that decentralized applications give us tools to create new ways of doing things and fixing problems that exist on the internet today. But at the same time, I don't think everything has to be decentralized or be a DApp. And I think it's unlikely that we will see the internet be transformed over the next few years into a much more decentralized place. I think what we'll see is where decentralization is a critical capability in areas where centralized systems produce security problems, privacy problems, surveillance problems, control, censorship, governance problems, and things like that. I think we're gradually going to see more and more introduction of decentralized solutions in the form of dApps and dApp components that can be part of bigger applications. So not everything is a dApp, not the whole internet is a dApp, but we will see more and more important things having dApp components where they need decentralization.
Oh, okay, perfect. So what components do you believe that need right now the decentralization?
Well, to me, decentralization solves problems of power and control. So in areas where putting one company in charge of something leads to problems with censorship, with control, with data privacy, and things like, or trust and security, those are areas where I think we can find opportunities to decentralize, or where the experience for the user can be made better if there is an element of decentralization or if there's an element of interoperability. A good example, of course, being games. So, you know, games as they exist.
It's a good fit. I mean, talking about gaming and blockchain is a perfect fit.
Yes. You know, I think for many people, games are much more than just an occasional entertainment thing. There are lots of people who for whom gaming is a big part of their life, for whom gaming might also be a source of income. And it's a social interaction. It involves socialization. And so from that perspective, many games today are closed worlds. They are isolated from each other. There is no overlap or connection between them. The game companies have absolute and complete control. You have no privacy, no security, no independence, no control over assets that you build. Anything you create isn't really yours. It belongs to the game company. You can be kicked off for any reason at any time. You can't transfer things from one game to another. You can't sell the work you produce inside a game. You don't have the ability to have artistic expression. So think of it this way. If you think of Game World as a mini version of society, in society, in real life, we have a public sphere. We have places that belong to everyone, right? That belong to the public, parks, streets, buildings. And in those places, we have rights. We have rights to expression. We have rights to assembly and association. We have rights to be free from harassment and control, from revealing our privacy, et cetera, et cetera. So if we think of games as mini societies, what kind of societies are they? Well, I mean, they're totalitarian fascist dictatorships, basically. there is no public space. Everything is private. They're feudal, or you can pick, the exact political system is up to discussion, but they are totalitarian. You have no rights. You are in somebody else's private domain, and in that private domain, they have complete control. They don't only have complete control over the activities that take place in the private space. It goes much deeper than that. In Game World, the owners of the private space have complete control over the very physics of the space in which you are. And you have zero rights, right? You don't own any of the property that exists in there, even if you create it. You don't own your body. You don't own your time. You don't own anything. So from that perspective, these worlds are wonderful for entertainment, but as miniature societies, they don't reflect well. They don't allow human expression, creativity, and freedom. And so they're not good reflections of society.
Yeah, they're not.
Now, can we fix that with blockchain? Maybe. Some aspects of this, yes, I think we can. So these games, the gaming worlds, suffer from concentration of power, concentration of control, issues of trust and censorship, control over money, assets, property, and things like that, all of which are areas where blockchains provide solutions, whether it's governance, whether it's transferable assets like non-fungible tokens, whether it's censorship resistance, whether it's money inside the game, whether it's control of public spaces, voting rights, civil resistance, identity issues, all of those issues, are issues where blockchains have an impact.
I believe that with the use of blockchain technology, we can solve all that stuff, and it opens a new whole universe that we can move items between games, and most importantly, players can now sell their items. Imagine being a World of Warcraft player, for example, and trying to sell your character. This was Instaban. You didn't own the character. Now we have much more easier and consumer-focused ways to monetize your gaming time and your experiences. So I would like to stick for a little bit in gaming and talk about non-fungible tokens. I know through your work from Ethereum that you are well aware technically also about non-fungible tokens. So do you believe that NFTs can be the Trojan horse of blockchain inside the gaming space? Do you think that the major companies like Electronic Arts and Ubisoft, well, Ubisoft already does this, but all these major companies will follow with the flow of the indie games that pop up using blockchain technology eventually?
Probably not. And I think that's actually a good thing. So let's first of all, how familiar would you say your audience is with the concept, terminology, and operation of a non-fungible token? But perhaps we should start by defining that.
All right. Yeah, please.
So a token is something that represents something else. It could be something monetary, like a coin that represents value, or a dollar bill, or a euro. It could be something that represents access, like a ticket for a concert or something like that. It could be something that represents identity, something like a driver's license or a passport. It could be anything that is a symbol that represents something else that you hold that represents something else. So in Ethereum, it is very easy to create various types of tokens, and the most common tokens are fungible tokens. The definition of fungible is something where each unit of the token is indistinguishable from another unit of a token. So if you have one DAI token that represents a US dollar, you can't really tell the difference between one DAI token and another. They're all just DAI tokens, just like a euro coin is just a euro coin. It's not this euro coin. It's not a special euro coin. It's just a euro coin, and each one is replaceable by any other. That concept is called fungibility, and it applies mostly to currencies. The term non-fungible token is actually badly named, in my opinion, because what it does is it describes this type of token as the negative of the other type of token, meaning that it assumes that most tokens are fungible, meaning currency-like, where each unit is indistinguishable. And then it defines this in opposition. It says, this is not a fungible token, which isn't a very good description. The other type of name for a fungible token is called a deed or certificate of title. And I think that's a much, much better name. A deed is the title you have to your house, or the piece of paper that shows that you own your car, or it might be a certificate that says you own a painting or a piece of art. A deed as a concept actually describes non-fungible tokens much better, because it describes what it is, not what it isn't. So what is a non-fungible token? It is a deed. It's basically a digital token that represents ownership, access, association, affiliation, or identity with regards to some context. It could represent ownership of the shield of Gondor from a game. It could represent ownership of a planet in a space game. It could represent ownership of a costume or a character. It could represent ownership of a player avatar. It could represent an entire world in Minecraft, for example, that you own and have constructed. So that's what an NFT is. Is that helpful?
Yes, of course. So do you think that these NFTs can bring value to gaming. And see that, like,
I think they can bring enormous value to gaming because these are independent of the game in which they are used, but that means you can have secondary markets, you can have transferability, you can have interoperability, which means you can move from one to another, potentially you can move from one to another game. They represent ownership that is held by the player, so that the player ultimately has control. That means they can, in fact, buy and sell these things, but they can also give and receive these as gifts or trade. They can work to produce them and get paid for them. But they can also take control of these and move them to another compatible system. So let's say that the company that makes your game goes out of business, and theoretically this game was based entirely on non-fungible tokens. Well, somebody else could build a different game that uses similar mechanics, and you could move all of your assets, effort, experience effectively to this new game. So it makes game systems open instead of closed. So to answer your question, will Electronic Arts, will the big game companies do this? Absolutely not. And the reason they won't do this is because their primary mechanism is to use control, monopoly, and economies of scale to make money. And very, very little interest in creativity, artistic expression, user experience, customer service, freedom, independence, social goods, the promotion of arts, entertainment, or any of these other things. These are all secondary. And they prove this. They prove this every time they take a little indie game studio and completely strangle it and destroy it and turn it into a massive soulless corporate machine for producing shitty games that they sell you with a minor update each year, and people go out and buy and then are disappointed and complain. They're never going to do this because this goes completely against everything that they stand for. But it's not about them. The real question is, can we see a revolution in game making that starts from indie games, that gives players freedom and a better experience and more control and more independence, and in such a way have games that are not as flashy, not as big budget, but are actually enjoyed by players who invest their time and creativity into them, to the point where that starts becoming the real game environment and people stop using the crappy games. And we've seen this happen before. We've seen this, we've seen this, for example, with what YouTube did to the music industry. We've seen this with what YouTube did to the independent movie maker industry, right? So yeah, people still go and watch Avengers, the 77th edition, bullshit big Hollywood movies, but you can now be an independent film creator who has a solid audience and publishes on multiple platforms with open licenses. You can be an independent music artist who has an audience and gets paid through cryptocurrency. So I think EA is never going to really embrace this. It's not in their game.
Well, let's go.
It's, they say, it's in the game. Well, it's not. NFTs are not in the game. It's going to be indie studios. It's going to be smaller creative artists. And what I really like to see is the introduction of NFTs and blockchain capabilities into game building platforms. You know, the really interesting thing is not whether EA does NFTs. The really interesting thing is whether Unity does NFTs.
Yeah.
game creation engines and right.
There are a lot of SDKs.
So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Time will tell. Definitely. To move forward, I would like to leave gaming aside for a while. And I know that in 2014 you were working for Blockchain Info, now it's blockchain.com, and you were doing security back then. And I would like to ask you about security, blockchain security. You are an advocate of blockchain, just like I am for so many years. What will happen if, for example, quantum computers came out and blockchain is penetratable? What will happen to Bitcoin? What will happen to all these blockchains if we suddenly find flaws in the security that we were not aware until today? Is this something that we should be concerned of?
Yeah. First of all, I want to point out that I've been in information security since 1991. The brief 10 months I spent at Blockchain Info was certainly not in any way the highlight of my security career. I've actually worked in information security before Bitcoin and blockchains, and since, and it's been one of the main focuses of my career. Information security is a complex thing, but the most important thing to realize is that information security is a continuous effort against escalating threat with improving defenses, meaning that security is never perfect, but it's also never completely failed. New attacks come out all the time. Flaws exist that we don't know about. And quantum computing is just a new vector for attacking the security of cryptographic protocols. But cryptographic protocols also fall to other types of attacks and over time get weaker and weaker as our knowledge about cryptanalysis gets better and better. So it's important to understand that this is a continuous competition. The people trying to break it find a new way to break it. The people trying to defend it find a new way to defend it. And back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And this means it's evolution. There will be attacks that involve quantum computers. There will be flaws that we don't know about in blockchains. There have been already. But because of the way that we design information security systems, we never design information security systems where if you break through one part, you get everything. Instead, one of the most important concepts in information security is called defense in depth or layered defense, meaning that for every defense has layers. We have several different ways of defending against several different threats. And if one of these layers is broken, an attacker may get part of the control or the system or access to the money, but they don't get everything. And the other layers continue to work. So even with quantum computing, if quantum computing can break, for example, the elliptic curve digital signature algorithm that's used in Bitcoin, that's not the only layer of defense. There are three or four different other layers that protect against theft by quantum computer, including the fact that addresses are hashes of public keys, which means there's a different algorithm, two different algorithms, the SHA-256 and RIPE MD-160 hash algorithms that hide public keys behind addresses. There is a whole structure in Bitcoin and other blockchains whereby you don't actually show your public key until you spend it. And then when you spend it, if you don't reuse your address, it's already empty. So by the time you show it, there's nothing there to hack. The mining system works with a completely different algorithm, which is the application of SHA-256. And we can also replace the digital signature algorithm, which is already one of the things that's being planned for 2021 with the introduction of a new signature algorithm called Schnorr Signatures. And this is not just in Bitcoin. Dozens of other blockchains that have different signature algorithms, different elliptic curves, quantum resistant signature algorithms, changing signature algorithms, it doesn't matter. So there is no one attack that can break everything, especially not in a decentralized system where there's not only one thing to attack, where if you have a flaw in one software implementation, it's not the only software implementation, where the keys are held in a million different places. So if you wanted to attack, you'd have to attack a million different places. So the decentralization protects us against that. There is no one attack that's just going to completely break Bitcoin or another blockchain. It's just a matter of, listen, we have an attack. We do a counterattack, a countermeasure, a defense. And then they find a new way to attack. And we make a change to the system to defend against this new attack. And on and on and on.
Thank you for this detailed explanation. So, Andreas, last question for you. If Bitcoin is the new gold, Ethereum, what is it?
Well, I think these analogies are useful to get a general understanding. So it's useful to say Bitcoin is the new gold for people who don't understand what Bitcoin is, because they can relate it somewhat to gold. But the truth is that Bitcoin isn't gold. It's not just digital gold. It's a much more complex thing than that. And it's very difficult to say exactly what characteristics of gold it has, because it has so many characteristics that simply don't exist in the physical world. And for Ethereum, you know, people make another simple analogy, say, okay, so if Bitcoin is gold, then Ethereum is oil. Great, but it's not polluting like oil. So that's not a good analogy either. And if each of those analogies is bad for describing a technical system that is so much more and so much deeper and so much more complex than a simple analogy to a physical commodity, if you use those analogies to compare two different systems, then you really break down the analogy and it really stops helping you. To say, how do you compare Bitcoin and Ethereum? Let's compare gold and oil. Then you've lost it completely, because it doesn't work that way. I would say that Bitcoin is primarily focused on the technology of money, and specifically the technology of very, very scarce, very robust, very secure money that cannot be stopped. Ethereum is focused more on the flexible and programmable money-like, but also other things world, where you have tokens and abstractions and financial instruments and programmable smart money and various other combinations of these things, including identity and governance and voting and tokens and deeds, like we just talked about. Because it focuses on a broad area and it's much more flexible, it's less secure and less robust than Bitcoin, but that's okay, because that's not its goal. Its goal is to be much more expressive. Its goal is to allow you to compose things together and make much more interesting and complex things. Bitcoin has to be simple. Simplicity is one of its greatest strengths. The more simple it is, the more secure and robust it can be, the less opportunities for weird things to happen. Ethereum chooses to be flexible and complex and programmable and more like Lego. You can make anything with it. And that's great, but it does mean that it's not always as secure. So they're two very different things. They're not trying to be the same thing. They're not trying to compete with each other. And I think they're both great at what they do and should stick to what they do and not try to be each other.
Okay, perfect. So that was all. Thank you. Thank you for being with us, Mr. Andreas. It was great to have you to this show. And hopefully we can have you back again in the future. I wish you only the best, a great year, and thank you.
It's been my absolute pleasure, George. Thank you so much for having me on the show, and good luck with everything, and have a wonderful holiday season.